Truman Capote was the first time I played a high-profile person in a high-profile project. And I think I was in such a state of panic that I think I tried to read everything, see everything, do everything, simulate his handwriting. And now I rely much more on the drama that is presented and try to work out what is actually required. How much of the personality, how much of the physical life will I have to recreate so that it isn't distracting for the audience? I don't need to know everything about, speculate about all of these things about someone's life. I only need to speculate about very precise things that are prescribed by the script.
And in the case of all those people, actually, Karl Rove, Swifty Lazar, Truman Capote...
Good-looking.
Alfred Hitchcock, good-looking. That's what I was going to say. I was going to say, they all have very distinctive voices. That must be... It's clearly quite useful for actors. It would be harder to play Nick Clegg, for example.
Yes, Hitchcock noticeably speaks very slowly. And that's can be very controlling. If you speak very slowly, you take control of the silence around the words and you don't finish sentences. It's a way of sort of monopolising space in a way. And Capote had this extraordinary concoction of a voice of many different influences. And Hitchcock's voice, in direct contrast to his sort of physical state, his voice is very warm and charming, and it sort of trawls his history with it. It has a bit of LA, it has a bit of East End London, it has the cigars he smokes, it has the wine he swills, it has all of that within it, and it's enriched by that. And that gives you a big, big clue, I think, into something about the physical life and everything.
You have a musical ear for these things. There is something musical about it. You are thinking about individual notes sometimes in someone's voice.
I'm usually very interested in lines that I can't learn, lines that I'm reluctant, that the voice doesn't seem to fit with certain lines, because they will usually be key lines in a script. You're going on hunches, after all, because whatever you're going to show in the drama won't be a matter of public record anyway. You won't have ever seen them behave like this.
Which is the key point. Yeah, with politicians, for example, it's relatively unlikely. In fact, it's impossible. They can't talk all the time in ordinary life the way they do in interviews and speeches, which is a mistake some people make.
No, and that's a huge comfort when you're looking at these parts, is the idea that no one knows about how someone got out of bed. No one knows how someone opened a door. No one knows. And this is stuff that you are speculating on based on the research you've done, but also in terms of what would be interesting.
Segment 1.
Truman Capote was the first time I played a high-profile person in a high-profile project, and I think I was in such a state of panic that I think I tried to read everything, see everything, do everything, simulate his handwriting. And now I rely much more on the drama that is presented and try to work out what is actually required. How much of the personality, how much of the physical life will I have to recreate so that it isn't distracting for the audience? I don't need to know everything about, speculate about all of these things about someone's life. I only need to speculate about very precise things that are prescribed by the script.
Segment 2.
And in the case of all those people, actually, Karl Rove, Swifty Lazar, Truman Capote...
Good-looking.
Alfred Hitchcock, good-looking. That's what I was going to say. I was going to say, they all have very distinctive voices. That must be... It's clearly quite useful for actors, isn't it? It would be harder to play Nick Clegg, for example.
Yes, Hitchcock noticeably speaks very slowly. And that's can be very controlling. If you speak very slowly, you take control of the silence around the words and you don't finish sentences. Is a way of sort of monopolising space in a way. And Capote had this extraordinary concoction of a voice of many different influences. And Hitchcock's voice, in direct contrast to his sort of physical state, his voice is very warm and charming, and it sort of trawls his history with it.
Segment 3.
It has a bit of LA, it has a bit of East End London, it has the cigars he smokes, it has the wine he swills, it has all of that within it, and it's enriched by that. And that gives you a big, big clue, I think, into something about the physical life and everything.
You have a musical ear for these things. There is something musical about it. You are thinking about individual notes sometimes in someone's voice.
I'm usually very interested in lines that I can't learn, lines that I'm reluctant, that the voice doesn't seem to fit with certain lines, because they will usually be key lines in a script. You're going on hunches, after all, because whatever you're going to show in the drama won't be a matter of public record anyway. You won't have ever seen them behave like this.
Segment 4.
Which is the key point, yeah, with politicians, for example, it's relatively unlikely. In fact, it's impossible. They can't talk all the time in ordinary life the way they do in interviews and speeches, which is a mistake some people make.
No, and that's a huge comfort when you're looking at these parts, is the idea that no one knows about how someone got out of bed. No one knows how someone opened a door. No one knows how, and this is stuff that you are speculating on based on the research you've done, but also in terms of what would be interesting.